This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we'll visit with Gus Weil, the fabled political consultant. He'll talk about the politics of the military strike in Syria. 11 years ago, Louisiana's congressional delegation voted en masse for the war in Iraq. That included Democrats John Breaux, Mary Landrieu, and Bill Jefferson. This time around, so far, no one is voting for the move to go to war in Syria, and a few members, including Senator David Vitter, say no. We'll talk about it with Gus. Also, Ellen Galinsky, president and co-founder of Families and Work Institute in New York. She established the field of work and family life, and her books include The 7 Essential Life Skills Every Child Needs and The 6 Stages of Parenthood. We'll talk with Ellen as well, but first the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Thank you for your support this week. And we're joined now by Ellen Galinsky, the president and co-founder of Families and Work Institute of New York. She helped establish the field of family and work at Bank Street College of Education. And she was on the faculty there for 25 years. She's written more than 45 books, including Mind in the Making, The 7 Essential Life Skills Every Child Needs, Ask the Children, and The 6 Stages of Parenthood. Ellen will be in Baton Rouge Monday at 4 o'clock. Registration begins for her appearance at the Renaissance Hotel, and the topic will be childhood education. Good morning, Ellen.
Good morning.
This is something you have focused upon for a few years, and how are we doing as a country?
Quite a few years. I began this, what has now been a 13-year journey, asking a question, which is, what are we doing as a country to dim the fire in children's eyes? I found in a study that I was doing of youth that far too many children turn off to learning, not just to school, not just to education, but to learning itself, and yet they're born with a fire in their eyes, with a passion to learn. So I went out and looked at some of the best research on, from neuroscience to cognitive development to the development of literacy or math or the STEM science content areas, to understand how children learn best and therefore what we can do to keep that fire burning in children's eyes. The result is a book called Mind in the Making, and that's what I'll be speaking about in Baton Rouge on Monday.
Well, Ellen Galinsky, according to Judy Woodruff, the senior correspondent for PBS NewsHour, said already the go-to person on interaction between families and the workplace, draws on fresh research to explain what we ought to be teaching our children. What should we be teaching our children?
We pay a lot of attention to the content that children need to know, and that's important. What we're not paying attention to is how children learn or what are executive functions of the brain. Executive functions of the brain all take place in the prefrontal cortex of the brain, and they pull together our emotions, our social understanding and our cognitive understanding so that we can pursue goals. And what I found in looking at the research, and this took me a while of, again, reading more than 1,000 studies and interviewing close to 100 people and going into the labs with a camera crew and actually filming the research as it took place, what I found is that there are these skills that emerge in children. I think of them as life skills because we can improve them as adults just as children can improve them. And we don't pay very much attention to their emergence. But if we did, if we promoted these life skills in addition to teaching children the content that they need to know, children are going to be much more likely to thrive. We're going to be able, I believe, to make a bigger dent than we've been able to make in the achievement gap in this country.
You have noted, Ellen, that the years between 0 and 8, those are prime years as far as developing a child.
The children are born, as opposed to other species, with much less of their brain development having taken place at birth. And in fact, my daughter just had a baby, and they call the first few months of life the fourth trimester these days, just to make it clear how much of a brain development is happening. We're born with a genetic endowment, but what happens to our genes is that experience writes on them and shapes the architecture of the brain. And if you think of it as a house, we're building the foundation in the early years, and of course the brain is plastic and we can always learn in different ways, but we make a much greater investment in helping children in the early years. Then we're having to fix things later on. If you think about it, any time an adult looks at a child and a child looks back and they have a give-and-take interaction, there's 700 neural connections per second being made. Their eyes are lighting up, which is the metaphor that I used for keeping kids engaged in learning, and so are eyes. So it's really important to start in the early years. And an example of a skill that I think of as critical is one skill is focus and self-control. Being able to pay attention amid distractions and not going on automatic, but doing what we need to do to achieve our goals. And we tend to think of teaching kids to pay attention by getting them to sit still and, you know, listen. But in fact, it's by being active that children learn to pay attention, by being motivated, by being active. Just a real simple example is that the game Simon Says exemplifies really well executive functions, and in fact it's used as a screening tool for seeing whether kids are ready to school. It's called the head-to-toe task there. But the idea is that you can't do something until you say Simon Says. Well, in the measure that's used in academics, you have to do the opposite. So if you say, if the adult says touch your head, the kids are to touch their toes. And that's an example of having self-control, which teaches us to really pay attention, to think flexibly, to remember the rules, to focus on what we're doing. And it's through that active game, simple things like this, none of these things cost money or take more time than we're already giving to kids. They're just doing things in slightly different ways.
We're visiting with Ellen Galinsky. Her latest book is Mind in the Making. It has sold well over 100,000 copies and had more than 1.5 billion media impressions since it was released. And she will be in Baton Rouge Monday at the Renaissance Hotel at 4 o'clock registration. Her presentation is at 4:30. Now, you have touted community schools. How would community schools help with early childhood development?
We looked for a partner after the book, and given the interest in the book, because it shares through videos the best research on kids and their development. We looked for a partner and decided to partner with community schools around the country through a Kellogg Foundation grant because I really like their approach to education. They are now going downward, that is, they're linking with early childhood programs, but they bring the other supports and services that families need. So, for example, if a family needs to learn job skills or English as a second language or any of those sorts of things, that's part of the whole community school structure, or healthcare can be part of the community school structure. They're seen as a hub in the community where it's not just, in the traditional sense, not just learning that happens. It's the real support that children and families need to succeed. Some families need them more than others, and community schools do a beautiful job of being a neighborhood convener.
Now, you're an accomplished photographer. How important is it that children receive indoctrination in the arts, music, and that sort of thing as they are developing?
We tend to think of, and in this country, we've begun to move the arts into the fringe activity, like it's a nice to have, but not a must have. And yet, there's a great deal of research. This was summarized by the Dana Foundation in looking at brain development. But there's a great deal of research that shows that the kids who tend to do well academically are also involved in the arts in some way, whether it's drama, whether it's music, whether it's painting or sculpture or dance or those sorts of things. So the Dana Foundation drew together a task force a couple of years ago to look at why that correlation, that is it just, you know, the kids with more get up and go can also be involved in the arts and do well at school, or is there something that happens through the arts that actually causes better academic outcomes? And they found increasingly that there is a causal relationship, that is, the motivation, the passion that children have for the arts, the ability to pay attention, the ability to follow through, the practice that you do for the arts really has an impact on other academic areas in learning and life in school.
Well, Ellen Galinsky, thank you for your visit this morning. Have a safe trip, and Baton Rouge will welcome you Monday afternoon, 4:30 at the Renaissance. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your local number, and outside the area you may call 877-217-5757. President Obama's position on Syria to punish President Bashar al-Assad for using chemical weapons without seeking to force him from power has been called half-pregnant by critics at home and abroad who prefer a more decisive American intervention to end Syria's civil war. Those words today on the front page of the New York Times, but Mr. Obama's limited strike proposal has one crucial foreign ally, Israel. Israeli officials have consistently made the case that enforcing Mr. Obama's narrow red line on Syria is essential to halting the nuclear ambitions of Israel's archenemy, Iran. That said, so far, no member of the Louisiana congressional delegation has voiced support for President Obama's prospective course of action. U.S. Senator David Vitter says he will oppose American military intervention in the ongoing civil war. He joins Congressman John Fleming of Minden as the only other member of the Louisiana congressional delegation to outright oppose military airstrikes in Syria. So far, no word from U.S. Senator Mary Landrieu or Congressman Bill Cassidy, who, of course, are running against each other in next year's U.S. Senate election. 11 years ago, all members of the Louisiana delegation voted for the war in Iraq, and that included U.S. Senator Mary Landrieu and fellow Democrats John Breaux and Bill Jefferson. With us to talk about this is Gus Weil, the veteran political consultant. Good morning, Gus.
Good morning, Jim.
What's your assessment of why?
Jim, I'm going to give you an answer that violates every rule of talk radio. I'm going to express myself with three words. I don't know. And here's what I'm talking about. The question that you've just asked, the question that the president indeed is posing to the nation, is as old as the biblical times, because the question is, am I my brother's keeper? Not so easy to answer. We see 500 children killed by that gas, sarin or whatever it's called, poison gas. And as human beings, we react immediately and with a great feeling. And we should. That's morality. But then there's reality. How do our actions affect us here in this nation? We see film footage of every war in the last 40 or 50 years, none of which we've won. The last war this country won was World War II. After that, it's always been a compromise. With one small detail, the American men and women who have been maimed, who have been wounded, killed, and who are the true losers in every war, has their death been a viable thing? The fact that they're no longer with us, I don't know. So that's the other side of the question, the reality. And it seems to me that as the most powerful nation on earth, we have to now answer that question. Is it reality or is it morality? And can the two be mixed? I do not know.
877-217-5757, wherever you are, for Gus Weil, HB in Denham Springs. HB, good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Weil, just a real quick question along with what you just talked about. Have we as a society, both in our domestic front and foreign front, have we reached a point in time where the decisions that we have to make that are most important to the welfare of the world and ourselves, have we reached that point where we're darned if we do and darned if we don't? Thank you, sir.
Absolutely is my answer. We're the strongest, biggest, richest nation on earth, and those who support us will bless us for any actions we take. But then there will be the people who will hate us for the actions we take. There's never been a nation, even the Roman Empire, with the power that we have and the wealth. In other words, we're blessed beyond blessing by God. But what responsibility accompanies that blessing? And there's the catch. Are we obligated to go into every troubled area in the world because we see wrong being done? Or is our obligation to stay home and take care of our own people? Now, who can answer that question? Surely not Gus Weil.
Now, Senator Landrieu voted for the war in Iraq. Obviously, when John Breaux came out in favor of it, it put her in a untenable position to be against it. But this time around, she has not stated how she will vote, and some believe she will vote no. Would that be an acknowledgment that the vote back in 2002 was an imprudent one?
In her case, it's an acknowledgment that she's in a political campaign for her life, and that really colors any vote that those folks make. You know, if there's no election on, they can vote how they really feel. But if there's an election on, or impending, as hers is, not so easy to go ahead and vote one's convictions.
297-5633 for Gus Weil. Rinaldi in Sherwood Forest. Hi, Rinaldi.
Hi, good morning, Jim. Gus, always a big fan of yours. Man, this is a bad, bad situation, Jim and Gus, because as the world leader, I mean, you know, if America had involved itself as Churchill wanted it to early in World War II, you know, we have to kind of go back and wonder how many lives could have been saved in that war. But given that Americans have been given such false information, I know that Mr. Saad did use gas on his own people, but the question that I have to raise, Gus, is why isn't the Arab League, Jordan, Turkey, and nations like that, why have they not called upon the United States to take some sort of military action, even though these guys are defeating arms to the opposition? They have not called for Western intervention. Why is that, Gus? And the United States needs to take a look at that, because these are the guys going to have to live with the mess after we're gone.
Your question is a good one, and you're 100% right in what you said. Most countries are going to stay out of this, or if they get involved. For example, I hear that France is going to join us. France never does too much. They may send the Foreign Legion or a handful of troops, but it is always the United States of America who must send their precious manhood, womanhood, and treasure. And the ending is never any good. For example, our enemy is the Taliban. And now there's a possibility when we pull out of Afghanistan that the government will even be comprised of the Taliban. So if nothing is clear-cut, evolution has not produced simplicity. It's only produced new questions.
Ryan in Sherwood Forest. Hi, Ryan. You're on with Gus Weil.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I think this is a defining moment in the relationship between the American political leaders and the will of the people. And I take issue with Gus's position that it's a question of morality versus reality, with morality being on the side of intervention. I think that it's a moral conundrum, maybe, to think that a person can do a moral good by killing other people.
All right, Gus.
I don't know what to answer this gentleman. He brings up a good point. I really don't know. For example, someone who's against this intervention gives this following argument, and it's a heck of an argument. He or she says, well, this thing doesn't affect America. Syrians haven't bombed us or blown up our World Trade Center. And they're right. It does not affect us as Americans, only as members of the human race. Is that a connection that we have to always observe? If it is, then we have to go into Syria and kill that man.
Well, killing him, by the way, that's supposedly illegal. Some might say that would be the best course of action if you're opposed to a leader, but we don't do that anymore, supposedly. We being the United States and its allies. But is there any guarantee, Gus? And this is the question I think that many have. Is there any guarantee that if al-Assad is thrown out, that the next regime will be any better?
Absolutely not. That also muddies the water. We can't tell who the good guys are in this conflict if there is such a creature. On the other side of the line are the Muslim Brotherhood, the religious fanatics, and they hate us too. Do we, if we put in those people in power, if a government comes out of this tumult comprised of the Brotherhood, does that help the world or America or anyone? The answer is no, it does not. Any more than the present ownership. These countries have such a peculiar culture and makeup that it's impossible. I'll tell you what's lost. Simplicity is lost. Black and white is lost.
297-5633. Dan downtown. Dan, you're on the air with Gus Weil. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Yes, Gus, do you believe that whatever action we take should be paid for by higher taxes on the rich and corporate America rather than cutting Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicare?
There's a question out of left field, but how do we fund this sort of thing? In addition to the human cost, there's a cost to the economy, to the budget, and here we are, we're hemorrhaging red ink. How does the United States square this with going to war in Syria?
I'll tell you who it's going to help. It's going to help the big defense manufacturers, Boeing, Lockheed, people like that. The millions that we spend have to go on arms and weapons. Who's it going to hurt? It's going to hurt the American taxpayer who does not have lobbyists representing him in the halls of Congress. That's a terrible thing to say, but that is the truth. Of that, I'm certain.
Well, we have now 8 members of Congress. Not so long ago, we had 10. We got 6 U.S. House members and 2 U.S. senators, and so far, only 2 have stated how they will vote. And some, such as Congressman Cassidy, say they want to talk to their constituents. Is this the kind of decision that requires town hall meetings and that sort of thing, Gus? Or do you just go with your gut on it?
Well, here we go back to my original contention. From a moral standpoint, you vote how you believe, what you think is right or wrong. That's why you raise your hand and take that oath of office. But from a cold political standpoint, that is, keeping your elective job, then you indeed do go back and talk to your constituents and do some polling, more importantly.
Polling? Polling on something like this?
Yes, sirree.
You think polling is going on right now?
I think that polling is going on ferociously. I suspect not one of those senators doesn't have polled from his. See, the United States senator from, let's say, Louisiana, I'm just using this example, he could care less how people in Mississippi feel about this, but he better know how people in Louisiana feel. And his mail, how much mail is he getting? Telephone.
Well, I can tell you some people have acknowledged that Senator Landrieu is getting avalanche with people against this. Now, whether it's an orchestrated drive to affect her vote one way or the other, I don't know. But so far, based on what I have heard, and I've talked to some people, the phone lines are ringing in Washington and Baton Rouge and across the state for these people, and most of the people are saying, don't do it. Don't vote for it.
I believe that. Patriotism, it's interesting to say, patriotism is no longer how we operate emotionally. It used to be if they're dictatorship and we're the United States, the land of the free and the home of the brave, let's go get them. It's not that way anymore. Why? Because a lot of Americans are hurting. There's a lot of people who can't feed their families. Those are the new realities.
We'll talk more with Gus Weil after a brief timeout on WRKF. Thank you for your support. And when we return, remember the numbers to talk with Gus and be on the show, 297-5633 and 877-217-5757. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633, your number, Inkster Show at WRKF.org online. Gus Weil is with us, and David Woolman, the author of The End of Money, has graciously accepted the invitation to come back next week, and we will talk with him about his fascinating book. But some folks are engaged with Gus, and that's a good thing because of what's happening in Syria and the United States response. President Obama says a military strike is necessary. The members of Congress are weighing the president's words. William writes, a policy of containment has the potential to hamstring and ultimately topple Assad while keeping Russia at bay. I think a coalition could be formed to maintain a no-fly zone and negate Assad's air power while assisting moderate rebels. Patience is needed, not knee-jerk retaliation. Gus, your thoughts?
It sounds good, but it's just another theory, and there are a million of them. I'm unimpressed. I think a lot of people are looking for a rationale that will be the high road, at the same time, keep us out of another darn war.
We have a president and a vice president who've never served in the military. That's a first. Does that matter?
You would think so, but it doesn't. The fact that a man or a woman or a veteran is of not much help politically. Bush wasn't a veteran.
Well, he was, but not the kind of veteran that you are, for example.
Well, he was some kind of a veteran. You might check with Dan Rather on that, though.
Well, I think he did go AWOL in Alabama when he was in the National Guard, and he did everything he could to stay out of Vietnam, but he was not alone. So did Joe Biden, for that matter.
Jim, we can play word games with theories, but it's going to finally come down to the question that I posed: are we our brother's keeper? And if the answer is yes, then we're in it. And if the answer is I don't know, we're going to bide our time and not do much more.
Well, you remember your former client, John Kennedy, 1961, January 20th, in his inaugural address. What was it, Fight Any Foe? He's basically said the United States is the keeper of good in the world.
He did. He was a very, very bright man and had what I would call an Irish soul. But that, it was another time, a more innocent time. Evil was a certain color and humanity was another color. Everything was so clear cut. The United States, of course we would go to war. But then we started fooling with Vietnam and Korea and Afghanistan. And some people say we won and some people say we lost. And other people say, what's the difference? Look at Korea, a war that cost us thousands of young Americans. Well, there's a North Korea still now that the war's over. As tyrannical as any tyranny has been, there's a South Korea, which is what? A rich industrial nation.
Well, No, I have had pointed observations on occasion of Americans of the Vietnam era, like Joe Biden and Dick Cheney, the past two vice presidents who chose not to fight in the war of their generation. And then on occasion, Cheney in particular, they have been advocates for war when they were not willing to fight in their war, the war of their generation. Does that really matter? We've got John Kerry, for example, who did fight heroically in Vietnam, and he has become he's become a hawk on this. He says the U.S. has to go to war in Syria.
Yeah, it was interesting about John Kerry. There was film footage of he and his wife, Ms. Hines Kerry, dining with Assad of Syria. When they were over there 3 or 4 years ago. So what a difference a day makes.
You know? Yeah, the U.S. supported Assad. That's the week we helped create this regime over there. And one of the reasons I'm told, it's not something that's been unreported, it's been we thought he was a person friendly to the West. He's a big Phil Collins fan. But he turned out to be something other than the U.S. and its allies anticipated.
That has happened so often. Look at this terrible man in Afghanistan who we bring millions of dollars to the CIA in cash to his office. Look at him who constantly, after how many Americans have died keeping him in power, who constantly rubs our face in it. We haven't learned that we can trust many people. We're kind of when it comes down to brass tacks, we're kind of on our own.
When all is said and done, Gus Weil, will any of the 8 members of the Louisiana delegation vote for intervention in Syria?
I would say not, and I would say not because I think most Louisianians are against intervention in Syria, and I think that's how those elected officials are going to base their vote. What's going to keep them in office? For example, the best example, and I'm not picking on them, but the best example is Mary Landrieu, who faces a very serious election. If I knew how she was going to vote, I could tell you how the rest of the delegation is going to vote, because her life is at stake, her political life.
Well, another matter that is... front page news today, the National Security Agency is winning its long-running secret war on encryption using supercomputers, technical trickery, court orders, and behind-the-scenes persuasion to undermine the tools protecting the privacy of everyday communications in the Internet age. That's according to documents that have been disclosed. It's front page news in various places, including the New York Times, where I'm reading the lead story today. Gus, you worked in military intelligence.
Yes.
The U.S. Is great at this, but is it at the expense of the freedoms of the people in the country?
I tell you, I think that those men, I'll answer it in this way, who sold out our secrets, I think they were as traitorous as they could be, because a country doesn't get secrets of another country, which is an absolute necessity in intelligence work, without breaking a lot of eggs to make the omelet. Yes, we've got to, if we adhere in intelligence to a strict rule book, this country wouldn't last.
Lastly, and this is a question that some listeners have asked me to pose to you. Sunday at the LSU Union Theater, Larry King and Edwin Edwards will be featured. Larry asking questions of our former governor. What do you think of this?
Well, I think it's fascinating. Edwards is, after all, a man who's been elected 4 times by a sovereign state, and then served, 8 or 9 years in the penitentiary for graft, for stealing. So I think it's a really fascinating interview. It really is. What are they charging for tickets?
$60.
$60?
$60.
Wow. That's a lot of money.
Yeah. Well, Gus, we haven't talked with you since Eli Wallace Edwards was born on the 1st of August, the fifth child of the former governor, 86 years old. Larry King on the show the other day said there's a big difference between 66 and 86. He fathered a child at 66. 86 makes it unlikely that Edwin will be at Eli's college graduation.
God bless him. If he's happy, and his wife is happy, and the baby's okay, what's the difference? Everything is fine. Fairy tales ought to have beautiful endings. And this is a lovely fairy tale. This very old man, and I'm an old man, and this young woman having a child, I think it's rather lovely.
Gus, thank you so much. Good
Jim,
to talk with you.
It's always a pleasure being with you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And we'll be back Monday. And thanks to you for listening and for supporting WRKF in this hour of programming. Please keep the phones ringing, and we certainly appreciate your contributions. Until Monday, stay tuned.